Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. We're so glad to have you with us here this evening on Ask Herbal Health Expert Susan Weed, a two-hour radio show each Tuesday night. Herbal medicine is people's medicine, simple, safe, effective. Please bring your curiosity and health questions. Susan will enlighten, surprise, and delight you. I know most of you know Susan Weed already. She's my mom, so I know her. But for those of you who have not yet met Susan, I'd like to share she is the author of the Wise Woman Herbal series, five wonderful books on women's health and herbal medicine, including Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, Breast Cancer, Breast Health! The Wise Woman Way, Healing Wise, The Wise Woman Herbal, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, and Susan's latest book, Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way. In addition to being the editor at Ash Tree Publishing and writing her books, Susan is the director of the Wise Woman Center in Woodstock, New York. The Wise Woman Center is open to the public on appointment-only basis. She offers weekend workshops, intensives, and apprenticeships throughout the season. Susan is also available to you online via wisewomanmentor.com. There you can go and view her weekly e-zine. You can subscribe to receive a notification via email each week, or you could join her mentorship program. Susan also offers distance learning correspondence courses and online courses at the Wise Woman University. But you can also just go to her website, susanweed.com, where you will find thousands of pages online with recipes, articles, art features, and so much more. Well, for now, let's see what Susan has to share with us this evening. Thank you, and welcome, Susan.
Thank you so much, Justine. Another beautiful day as we move towards summer solstice. Every day, more and more leaves, more and more photosynthesis. This is starting to hit its crescendo. It is green. How is it out there where you are, Rebecca?
It's really nice out here. You know, I moved into the country, and I've really been enjoying it, and I just took a walk and found some yarrow and made this yarrow oil. So, yeah, it's really lots of stuff coming up all around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we are not going to be doing interview this evening. So we have two full hours to answer questions. This might let us dip back into some backlogged email questions. Or not. Let's see. Do we have anybody waiting on the line?
We just have one person waiting right now. So are you ready to go into the question?
I am.
Okay. In the 714 area code.
Susan, hi. It's your friend Kathy.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi, how are you? I just love hearing your voice and talking about what's coming up around you, and it's always interesting.
Thank you.
For you to share. I have two questions. Well, actually three, if I can. So we'll see if there's time. And first, a report that I've been, as you may remember, I've been using the herbal infusions since May 1st. And have really been seeing some positive changes in my vein issue in my legs. They are no longer feeling like I have wood legs. They feel, you know, like it's when I'm walking and there's less pain and less pain in the morning. And my elimination is much, much, much better. So those positive things are really, really making me happy and joyful. So thank you for that.
You are so welcome, and thank you for letting us know. Thank you, and thanks for letting us know.
When I start doing stuff like this, I become an evangelist, and so people are, I'm just tell everybody about it. So it's funny. So let's see if they do. Some of them will, some of them won't. When they're ready, they're ready. So here's my questions. For about a year, since I had a since my traumatized tooth of 40 years just blew up on me about a year ago, and since then I didn't connect it at the time, but I wonder if it is connected. I've been having trouble with my eyelids, my lower eyelids especially, and especially the one on the left. It's, if you remember, I have prosthetics. I don't know if that really has any point or has any relevance, but so there's no visual issues here to worry about. But it's my left eyelid is always sore and red. It used to come and go, at least give me a break for a couple of days, but now it seems to pretty much be constant. And sometimes I get a little relief. So let me describe it. My left bottom eyelid tends to have a red raw spot, very tiny. You can't really notice it too much. It's visually not too noticeable, but it feels raw and can scab over and disappear for a few hours, maybe a day, and then it's back. And even my whole eyelid can be very uncomfortable and just a little bit discomforting. And then in my right side, which is less, my right side is much less, it has in the corner near my nose a little blister, blood blister. I'm not even sure. Of course, I don't feel comfortable going to a doctor to see unless I get the, unless you say, whoop, this sounds like you may need medical intervention. But, so anyway, that's my first issue.
So let's talk about a couple of herbs that I like as allies for helping with the eyes. Chickweed is a great favorite among people who have these kinds of things going on with their eyes, any kind of persistent sores, redness, irritation. Chickweed is softening and cooling. So when things are red, we think something cool. And when it feels like something's raw, we want to soften it and ease it. And there's a variety of ways to use chickweed. The most obvious is simply to pick the chickweed, pound it a little or chew it up a little, and place it right on these areas. And that can be done for however much length of time you're comfortable with. So that anything from 5 minutes to half an hour. And it can be done once a day, a couple of times a week. The more frequently you do it, the sooner you will see results. If for some reason fresh chickweed is not available to you, and it's a pretty common plant, so it is generally easily available, then fresh comfrey leaf is also a really good choice for healing sores of any size anywhere on the body. Comfrey itself has irritating hairs on the leaf. Even harvesting it and working with it can sometimes cause a skin rash. So I usually suggest that you make a poultice of the fresh comfrey by boiling it. And after it's boiled for a while, then pounding it until it's really liquidy and smooshy. and then wrapping that in a thin cloth and applying that to the area. It's more work than the chickweed. The other option with the comfrey, the results are not as quick, is to make a comfrey infusion and then to soak a cloth in the comfrey infusion, warm or cold, whatever works for you, and use that as a poultice on the sores.
I have chickweed, the dried chickweed. I've heard that you can't find the fresh right now here in Southern California. It may have dried up. So I wonder if the if I take the dried chickweed that I make an infusion out of sometimes, can I use that,
Try putting a cloth in that and applying it. Again, my experience is that using fresh chickweed would heal sores like that usually within a week. Using dried chickweed may take 6 weeks.
Okay. I'm not going to give up on it. I'll ask around to see if anyone knows if there's any chickweed.
Yeah, see if you can find anybody who has any fresh chickweed. That'd be great.
I'm trying to find, I have some naturalists around who do these herb walks and such, so perhaps they know.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a kind of fun.
Shady, cool places is where it might still be lingering.
Cool. Okay. Fantastic. Now, I wonder if I can even use the infusions of, until I get, maybe if I can get the fresh chickweed, the infusion, since it's not going to hurt my eyeballs, why not
it's
get
not
a
It's not going to hurt your eyes at all.
Just get a dropper, a dropper bottle and start putting it into the eye. The eye socket. Yeah.
The socket, the orbit, right.
Okay.
Yeah, why not?
Now, so Susan, here's another thing that I would love your wisdom on, and that's that sleeping has always been sort of a challenge for me. It's gotten better in the last 10 years, but it's kind of popped up again where staying asleep is a problem, and let me just tell you what I use now and have for many, many years, and it's a super high quality sublingual form of melatonin. So I put the smallest amount on my tongue. Sometimes I wonder, is there any even there? That's how small I need it. And it works. When I do wake up, it's not for long, but it's, you know, it's just every hour or so I'm waking up, and I wonder if Skullcap, I know what you talk about a lot about, or just some wisdom on this issue for me.
Excuse me. Attack of the sneezes here. You're
Bless
welcome.
Bless you, honey. Bless
you. So I'm a little unclear, and just help me understand more. Are you saying that you have a problem going to sleep or that you have a problem staying asleep or both?
I would say both at this point. I don't worry so much about going to sleep. It could take me about 30 minutes. I read a book, an audio book, but it's just the waking up that's so frequent. So staying
asleep
is the
bigger. And then you wake up. Now, when do you take the melatonin?
I take it before I go to bed.
And do you take it when you wake up?
I've only done that once in a while because I don't want to. I don't like how I feel sometimes the next day, but I could try that.
Well, I wasn't suggesting that you try it. I'm trying to hear what you're saying, and I was a little unclear as to what.
No, I don't retake it.
You don't, so you take it once, get in bed, read for a while, listen to an audiobook.
Go to sleep. Mm-hmm.
Blow out your candle and go to sleep.
Right. Then I'll wake up.
An hour later, 2 or 3 hours later?
It's variable, but most often it's every hour, every 2 hours.
And does it take you half an hour to get back to sleep?
Sometimes. I would say 20% of the time it could take 30 minutes. Most of the time I turn over, start my book again, put the timer on my book. I have a way to do that, and I'm asleep pretty fast. So, but I would say 20% of the time I could be up for more than 30 minutes.
So you're asking about skullcap. I do find that skullcap can definitely help to calm down overactive thoughts. There seem to be a variety of reasons why we don't go to sleep easily or why we don't stay asleep easily. And skullcap is especially useful for the person who says, well, I can't get to sleep because there's so much going on in my brain. I'm thinking too much. There's so many thoughts whirring around in my brain that I don't get back to sleep. Hops is another possibility. And hops is more of a kind of relaxing sedative. In California, there are California poppies. And California poppy is a great favorite with California herbalists as a sleep inducer. And since skullcap doesn't grow where you live, I would think that the California poppy might be a better ally for you.
How fun. I'm going to look into that.
Yeah.
And I'll add this one thing, Susan. Thoughts are a problem, and you know, sighted people have trouble sleeping, but for blind people, they have a special problem, and I don't guess it could be, or maybe I'd love your input on this. When I close my eyes, I have no light perception, so closing my eyes or not makes no difference. And when I talk to other blind people who have no light perception, it seems to me that could be a common problem if they do have a sleep problem, that when you close your eyes or open them, it makes no whatsoever
difference.
Yeah, in your consciousness or that. Because that dark cave-like feeling sighted people must experience, right? We don't get that.
When they take sighted people and they put them in that kind of environment, in a dark cave, it is a rare person who lays down and sleeps for 8 hours. As a matter of fact, the anthropology of sleep is one of the least examined of any anthropologies, but what we do know is that the vast majority of indigenous people tend to have a broken sleep pattern, especially in the tropics where it's likely that Homo sapien originated. It makes far more sense in the tropics to sleep for 3 or 4 hours and then be up and active for 6 to 8 hours, and then sleep for 3 or 4 hours, and can you continue on like that?
Oh, fascinating.
So this idea that we're supposed to lay down and sleep X number of hours at one time is an artifact of the Industrial Revolution.
Sure, yeah. Got to get up and go to work.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Look back. Even like a couple of hundred years, and people were much easier with sleep. They would go and visit friends, and the friend would say, oh, I'm going to take a nap, and they would hang out with their napping friend.
Right.
So nowadays, it's almost like sleep is a kind of secretive thing that we don't, you know, talk much about, except when we're like talking about how we're not getting enough of it or not doing it right or having a hard time with it. And if we are not bound by the Industrial Revolution, if you don't have to go to work at 9 and leave work at 5, then my suggestion is rather than to try to change something that is truly normal about you, is to change how you work with your day.
Mm-hmm. very wise. That's what I was telling a friend of mine yesterday. I said, sleep when you can. If you have to take, if you need to take a nap, do it. Because
right.
I do that. If I have to take a nap, I just do it. Because I can. I work at home, work from home. Yeah. Beautiful.
And thank you for answering my unspoken question, because it really was an unspoken question. I thought, but she's not getting any light and dark cues. And I would think that would make a big difference.
I think it can. I mean, I've been blind since I was 2, and my mom told me that there was a period of time after my the surgery, you know, but I'm not the only one that has disturbed sleep. But I think that's
exactly
a little bit part
but
of it.
But those are often people who aren't out in natural light. So, you know, I have been told by my teachers that you don't need eyes to perceive light.
Amen. That's so true. I love being in the sun. I love it, the light. Yeah, that's right.
Yes, mm-hmm. That you can see light with your skin.
For sure.
And not just feel it.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's not as though we can do photosynthesis, but there's some relationship there. And that might be a way around that. You might want to see if days when you spend more time in the sun, if you sleep deeper on those days.
I'm going to do, I would love to do that.
Yeah.
And the final question, Susan, is I'm going to buy from a company called Pacific Botanicals, some St. John Wort, the botanical name for that, and some other items that I can't, and then I'll maybe perhaps grow it eventually, but I need to buy maybe a pound of it to, they have some limited, they have minimum orders. Give me an idea of what kind of quantity I need. Is a pound too much of one fresh herb? I just don't have any reference point for that.
So you're going to buy fresh Hypericum in flower from them?
I am. As one example, I might buy some yarrow as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's not dried Hypericum. It's fresh?
No, fresh. They send it. They ship it the next day. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well, what I would say is if a pound is the minimum, then you will do what you can with a pound. A pound is not a huge amount.
Oh, okay.
And you can make
a better price on 3. I get a better price on 3 pounds. Good.
Mm-hmm. Well, the tincture lasts for at least a decade.
Great.
And the oil, you know, I usually say oils are good for 2 or 3 years, but I got to tell you truthfully, and yes, I've skimmed the mold off of it several times, I'm still working on an enormous gallon of Hypericum oil that my apprentices put up over 10 years ago.
Ah.
So if you have the fresh plant, you can make oil, you can make tincture, and those are semi-preserved forms then of the plant that you can use for at least the next 10 years.
Okay, fantastic. This is a great way. And what I wanted, which is what I did, I ordered a few things, and I just, let me try these tinctures, let's see what works, then I'll start making my own, or maybe even growing. I'm going to try. We're going to try to grow in our backyard some of these things that really work for us. So,
Kathy, this is great, and I really enjoy talking to you. But
I know. Thank
you. There's somebody else who's waiting, huh?
I love you, Susan.
Thank you, Kathy.
Green
blessings. Good night.
Okay, we have another caller waiting, so in the 207 area code.
Hi, Susan. This is Bridget.
Hi, Bridget.
And hi. 2 weeks ago today, I had an emergency appendectomy, quite out of surprise. So I'm rounding the bend of the healing process. And I was wondering if you had any suggestions for me or any perspectives in general on appendicitis.
You know, it usually takes us by surprise. The appendix, it's called the vermiform appendix, the little worm-like appendix there. And so far as we know, it does next to nothing. But every once in a while, it just kind of blows up. And it's really life-threatening when that happens, and you need to have it removed. As a matter of fact, one of my very best friends was married to the captain of an oil tanker. And he had to be trained in emergency appendectomies in case anybody on his ship had an attack of appendicitis. And there was no doctor because you can die if you don't have your appendix removed. So you're not alone. It's not unusual. We haven't the faintest idea what causes it to happen. So no blame. It's not something you did or thought or didn't do or didn't think or ate or didn't eat. Your appendix just decided to do that. One of the things that I always like for healing is drinking nourishing herbal infusions. Are you already drinking infusions?
I am. I've been focusing on comfrey. I've had about a pound, gone through about a pound of it in the past 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. All right. Really getting her comfrey in. To be knitting and healing very, very well indeed. I also find that for many people, massage is a wonderful adjunct to healing after surgery. It's almost like our bodies, you know, kind of get really snotty and say, I can't believe you let someone cut on me with sharp knives. You're supposed to protect me.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And so, you know, you treat your body to a really nice massage. You say, I understand I betrayed you. Here's a nice massage to make up for it.
Mm-hmm.
And especially at this point in the healing, it shouldn't be problematic at all to have a massage.
Mm-hmm.
Calendula oil used around the incision. And was it an open surgery or a laparoscopic surgery?
It was laparoscopic.
Mm-hmm. So there's several, like, little holes, right?
Yeah, there were three incisions. And there's one that I feel like is slower to heal. Maybe the muscle was cut deeper. There was, like, an incision, a second incision under the skin that has been stitched. And that's really the last area that's...
So calendula oil on those areas, on those three areas, helps to prevent adhesions, helps the fascia to heal smoother, and helps to prevent scar tissue on the surface of the skin as well.
Okay. Great.
Okay. I'm so glad that you're drinking comfrey infusion, and I am sure that they're quite amazed at how rapidly you're healing.
Yeah, it feels good. It's just the last, final hurdle, I feel like, and I've been really trying not to play the blame game.
There's no
well.
Blame.
So that's been the mental struggle, but it's been good.
I once asked Elizabeth Kubler-Ross why people like to blame things, and she said, because it makes them feel in control.
Yes, especially when it was such an out-of-control experience.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
organize
thank
your closet.
You so much.
You're
What's
welcome.
That?
Organize your closet if you need to control something.
Yeah, I really have to organize my house after being laid
up. I dug
out
the sock drawer. Okay, green blessings. Right.
Thank you, Susan. Good night.
How are we doing, Rebecca?
Doing good. Sorry about that. All right. We'll move on to an email question.
Okay.
Dear Susan, I would like to know if you would comment on the recent issues with legalization of marijuana and the high concentrations of THC edible being accidentally consumed by children. It seems to me the plant is being misused and disrespected, and just wondering if there are ways you would suggest using the whole plant respectfully in the United States or in the states that allow its medicinal use. I was thinking an infusion for muscle tension or oil infusion to rub on sore bodies. Thank you so much for your time.
I agree with you that there is definitely a danger of children ingesting edible marijuana and not enjoying themselves. As a matter of fact, there's a danger of adults ingesting edible marijuana and not enjoying themselves. To put it in perspective, however, no matter how much an adult or a child doesn't enjoy themselves having eaten marijuana, it's not the same consequences as a loaded gun in the house. It's not the same consequences as alcohol in the house. And yet we seem to feel that we can tolerate a culture in which alcohol and guns are both freely available. That said, I think that THC and edible marijuana is a pretty minor issue. I personally think it's not fun at all to eat marijuana, and certainly, personally, don't consider it the best way to go. There is so much to be said about marijuana and legalized marijuana that it's hardly worth even starting. One of the things that has struck me is that in the states where I've been, where it's legal, it is only legal to grow it indoors. And that means that we're no longer getting a weed. To me, there's something special about a plant that grows outdoors, a plant that has been buffeted by the wind and rained on and had the sun shine upon it, been chewed on by insects or even gnawed on by a deer or something else. So it's certainly the way I want to treat myself is to put myself outside. I don't want to grow myself inside. I don't want to grow myself hydroponically. And I know that whatever I ingest becomes me. And so my goal is always to consume things that are made of the things that I want to make myself of. So I would rather eat a weed that's growing in my garden than eat a hydroponic tomato in December. I don't eat tomatoes in the wintertime because they don't grow where I live, and if I were to buy them, I know that I would be buying something that isn't connected to nature in the way that I want to be connected to nature. Now, I'm talking an awful lot about myself here, and I'm doing that because I want to be clear that each one of us is unique and individual, and that someone else might say, oh, well, I feel differently or I think differently about that. And this is certainly an issue where there can be lots and lots of room for different thoughts and different feelings. And this is partly because marijuana is a magnifier. There are many psychoactive plants that in a way actually change our personalities or change who we are. There are many plants that we can use that help us get in touch with ourselves, and then there are plants that take us away from who we really are. Marijuana is scary to many people because when they are under the influence, shall we say, of marijuana, they see themselves as they really are rather than the way they wish they could see themselves. One of the ways that I put this is that if you gave Bob Dylan a joint, he would write a song. If you gave a bum a joint, the bum would not write a song. Marijuana is not a magic medicine that turns on your creativity. If you're already creative, it certainly helps. If you're not, it's not going to do much for you. And, controversially, giving Bob Dylan a joint is not going to turn him into a bum. The marijuana will not turn the bum into a creative genius, and it will not turn a creative genius into a bum. The idea that you smoke and then you lack will or you lack desire to be creative is certainly not something that I can say I have seen in places like Woodstock, New York, my hometown, in places like Sedona, Arizona, highly creative towns where you would think that marijuana was puffed through the central heating systems of the houses. There is so much of it around. And incredible creativity, people of goodwill. So are there abuses? There probably are. Are there abuses of anything? There probably are. Can we stop those abuses by stopping people from using something? No. That just creates a worse abuse. Green blessings.
Did you want to answer her question about an infusion for muscle tension or an oil infusion to rub on sore bodies?
I would think that she would be better off going to a marijuana pharmacy and asking there.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay, next question. Greetings, Susan. I was just trying to turn my homeopathic vet mentor onto you, and she said you've spoken at some of their conferences before. After all these years of following you, I didn't know you did anything with animals. Are there articles on your site, or do you do consults for animal companions? That's her first question. Then she has like a whole another a couple paragraphs here.
Okay, well, let's deal with that one. Thanks for breaking it up for me.
Okay.
I don't do a lot of work with animals. I have cats. I have rabbits. I have goats. I have kept fowl, ducks, geese, chickens, various kinds. And I've always kept them with the expert advice of Juliette de Berkley Levy. And that's who I always recommend that people turn to. She has a book on the dog. She has The Herbal for Farm and Stable, which includes dogs and virtually every other animal that you're going to find on the farm. Certainly one of my treasured books. I have several copies of it. And Juliette is truly my guru about dealing with animals. Juliette's not around to go to the conferences, so I do go to the conferences and talk about natural rearing and talk about her ideas about things, but I must tell you truthfully that I am not much of a dog lover. It's not that I don't like dogs. It's just that dogs and I have a fraught history because before I could walk, I went over to a dog, threw my arms around it, crawled over to a dog, threw my arms around it, and it took a bite out of my head. I had to have 37 stitches in my head, and this was in the days before rabies shots, so I had to have the entire series of rabies shots injected into my abdomen, which is quite a painful process. Fortunately, I was too young to remember it directly, but my body remembers it. And my body remembers it, especially when I get around dogs, and my body says, run, run, go away, fast, that's a dog, oh, oh, oh. And now, interesting, that I keep goats, because that's what goats say, too. Goats do not like dogs, and so I have the perfect excuse to not have dogs around is because I have goats, and so don't even bring your dog because I can say don't bring it because it freaks the goats out, and it does. So that said, I would say kind of the opposite of what Juliette de Berkley Levy said. Someone once said to her, Juliette, you have written all these wonderful herbals for animals. Would you consider writing an herbal for people? And Juliette said, oh, I don't need to write an herbal for people. Just any of the cures that I mentioned, any of the herbs that I mentioned for the animals, you can use those for people. And so when I say, I would say the opposite of Juliette, it would be, I don't need to write specifically about animals. Any of the things that I write about for people, you can use for animals. With this caveat, if we're going to give animals herbs in any way other than a water base. In other words, if we're going to give an animal herbs in a tincture base, then we want always to dilute that, and usually I dilute that with milk. All right, on to the next part of the question.
All right. She says, now here's a question you've probably never gotten before, and I don't know if you have any experience with this issue. I am a female born about to turn 50. A few years ago, Great Spirit brought to my attention that I am two-spirited, a.k.a. transgender. I started testosterone therapy last year, on and off, and now been on since this past November. Not many have experience with female-to-male transition, not like they do with the male-to-female. And it's confusing to all, especially the conventional medical doctors, whom I really don't trust nor even believe in conventional medicine at all. I am wondering if you have any experience, advice, or maybe even colleagues who might have experiences in this area. As you can imagine, it might be pretty confusing to the body to be trying to switch over hormonal systems, and I don't even know to what extent that can truly happen. All I know is that my brain developed one way and my body another in utero when the hormones kicked in. Some consider this a birth defect, but I by no means feel defective. Although it's been a very hard life, I feel quite privileged to be able to see and experience both sides. I feel female to male especially. Get this more than male to female. I thought I'd reach out as I trust you, and if anyone had any advice or connections on this issue, it would be you. Fingers crossed. Thank you for anything you might be able to share. Peace and gratitude for all you've done for so many to make this world a better place.
People have been talking to me about this for over 30 years. Certainly not a new issue. My personal opinion is that two-spirit means that we don't do anything to change the body we are born in, but that we allow ourselves to express our alternate gender identity in any way we wish to without resort to surgical intervention and without resort to hormonal intervention. So I know that that's kind of an edgy view, and I say that because you are so forthright in saying that you feel that you are a two-spirit, not that you somehow feel that one of these identities is the right identity and the other is the wrong identity, but that you feel both of them are part of you. And again, to my mind, what you are doing is eliminating one of your spirits by taking hormones that your body is not making. This is more than confusing to your body. It's deadly to your body. The women that I know who have done this, who have taken testosterone, some of whom have even had plastic surgery to have what appears to be a penis created, tend to die of heart attacks. Testosterone is a difficult hormone. It's a difficult hormone for a body born a male to deal with, and it often causes heart attacks in those bodies. In a body born as a female, it is not possible to increase testosterone levels and remain healthy. So, again, I couldn't wholeheartedly endorse your desire to make this change. I believe that you could be a two-spirited person, and that that would give you something very special and perhaps something quite unusual, that rather than choosing to be a man or a woman, that you could truly choose to be both. Herbs that are hormonally rich don't have any hormones in them. They have hormonal precursors. And those precursors are called phytosterols. They're like steroids in a way, except that they're not that active. Sterols are sometimes considered to be the starter forms of hormones. So when we take any plant that is rich in phytosterol, wild yam is certainly one such, red clover is certainly one such, what our bodies do, if they are capable of it, if they have the right gut flora, is to ferment out the phytosterols and to then have access to those parts which the body can then use to make any hormones that it needs. As a matter of fact, the testosterone you're taking might very well be made from wild yam by a fermentation process in the lab, but that does not make it natural. It still makes it a hormone that's coming from outside your body. As a two-spirit, perhaps rather than relying on the doctors and the doctor's medicine, which you say you don't trust, perhaps you want to ally with some plant rich in phytosterols and ask your gut, what flora do you need to create the hormones that will help me nourish and strengthen both aspects of my two-spirit? Is there more?
Are you ready to move on?
I am. Green blessings.
Okay. There is another caller in the 561 area code. Hello, Susan.
Hello. What's up with you tonight?
Hi. Well, I'm happy to be calling in and talk to you. It's Jody in Florida. And,
hi, Jody. Jody, whose last name starts with M?
Yes, that's me.
Okay.
I have to tell you, I've been enjoying Blog Talk so much because I work in an office, and so listening to the archived shows allows me to really enjoy my evening walks even more. So that's been a lot of fun.
I'm so glad
so
that I get
you
to be a walk companion.
It's awesome. So I was calling you with two specific health questions tonight, if that's okay.
Sure.
One is related to digestion, and I can't remember if I read or if you had spoken about digestive changes, like when we're in our 40s, and I remember you saying, oh, you just feel like you can't digest that anymore. And that started happening to me. And that lasted for a little while, and then I started to get some, like, pain associated with that. So I had my doctor visit because I'm followed for a specific condition, but I mentioned it to her, and she was like, oh, well, we could do a test. And I didn't really want to do one. So I made some slippery elm balls, and I've been taking them, and I basically have no symptoms when I take the slippery elm, which is wonderful. And I know you say we shouldn't self-diagnose, and it's been interesting to watch my mind tell me all of the diseases that I probably have, some of which are pretty terrible. But I think I actually might have a stomach ulcer because what my body has asked me for and what I am, like, what makes it worse. So I think I have a stomach ulcer, but I'm not 100% sure. But I don't really want to get, like, a camera down my throat or, like, swallow barium. So I'm taking the slippery elm balls probably about four or five of them a day, and I really have a tremendous amount of relief from that. And then also, I haven't had comfrey in my infusion rotation, so I'm adding that back in hopes that it will help to heal whatever's happening there. But I'm curious to know if there are other allies that I could have or helpers that I could be involved with.
There are. And, you know, part of my ancestry is Russian. And so I've always been interested in anything that I could learn about Russian cures. And one of my favorite books, American Indian Herbology, is by Alma Hutchins, who obviously has some Russian roots, because in every plant that she talks about, she also talks about Russian experiences and Russian uses of the plant. One of the reasons that I really enjoy her book, and of course the primary reason, is because it's plants of North America. But I don't know if it was in her book or in a Russian herbal or from one of my teachers somewhere. This information that I'm about to give you is so lost in the dim recesses of my memory. It's surely something that I learned in the first 3 or 4 years that I was an herbalist. And it has been pretty useful for most of the people who try it. So this is an old Russian, let's call it Baba Yaga's cure for stomach and duodenal ulcers. And what is required are Russian staples, a head of cabbage and some potatoes. White potatoes are usually specified. And a grater, a box grater, because you want the fine grind on the box grater. It's the one where they've taken an awl and punched through, and there's little, like, things sticking through. The one that you would make potato latkes on, the really fine grind. And you are going to take your white potato and your box grater, and you're going to grind up your potato on the box grater into a bowl, and then you're going to just let it sit there for a bit. And you're going to take your cabbage, and you're going to grind up your cabbage on the box grater. Now, you don't have to do, like, 5 pounds of potatoes and a whole head of cabbage, because you're going to be taking the liquid that you have created by the tablespoonful. So you take a tablespoonful of the cabbage liquid, which kills the bacteria that causes the ulcer, and then you take a tablespoonful of the potato liquid, and if it's sat long enough that the starch has dissolved out from the liquid and you got like starch at the bottom and clear liquid, stir it up so you get the starch mixed in there, and then a tablespoonful of the potato liquid. It's usually advised that you only grate enough potato and cabbage to last you for a day, and you can take this up to 3 times during the day. I have never known anyone who had to do this more than 2 days before they felt that their ulcer was completely gone. That's pretty simple, huh?
That's pretty simple. And, you know, the first thing that I Googled when I Googled your name and ulcer, stomach ulcer, that's what I got. And I actually did that. And I did feel better pretty much immediately, like pretty much within 6 hours or so. I know that's pretty amazing, isn't it? Like 6 hours, you know, like, wow, I feel better. But I didn't feel completely well, you know, the symptoms continued, and I had a concern simply because I have a diagnosis of hypothyroidism, so I got concerned about the raw cabbage, so I think I probably only did the remedy for about 4 days, and then I switched to slippery elm. I kind of feel like it's a toss-up, like I've had my thyroid condition for many years, and so I'm not sure that a short course of doing a cabbage, you know, 3 teaspoons a day would be so detrimental, you know, versus continuing to have a stomach problem. So I was, but I was kind of perplexed about that.
I agree with you. It's a small amount of cabbage. And I would say that if it got some relief for you, that you could use that remedy once a day, at the time when it seems best suited to you, and you'll know when that is. If you have more problem in the morning, more problem in the evening, and if you feel that it takes some hours to come on, then you'd want to do it beforehand. or if you feel that it's best with your food, you could do that however you think best, and then continue to use the Slippery Elm. You have nothing to lose by doing these things. They are nutritive. They are helpful. If you're wrong about having an ulcer, you haven't hurt yourself.
Right. Yes. And I kind of have given myself what I feel is a reasonable window to feel better, meaning that if I don't feel well, I'll go back and talk to a medical person about it. But I'd really rather just feel well.
Sounds good to me. Stomach ulcers to me always make me smile, because it used to be one of the very few places where modern medicine said, this must have to do with stress. This must have to do with what you're feeling. This must have to do with your lifestyle. And then, of course, doctor proved what herbalists had long known, was that stomach and duodenal ulcers are actually a bacterial infection. And then, of course, modern medicine has, in its own wonderful way, gone totally overboard and tried to kill this bacteria, the Helicobacter bacteria, in everybody. And it turns out that this particular bacteria is quite important and has been with us for a long, 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 long time, and possibly even protects us against stomach and colon cancer. So, once again, science tries to dress somebody up and to be the bad thing, and we can get rid of this bad thing and be healthy, whereas life tends to be far more complicated, far more convoluted, and far more both and rather than either or.
So I guess I'll do the Slippery Elm and the both and cabbage potato remedies. I'll do all those.
Balance
come back. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if it's not too greedy, if I could ask a separate question, if nobody
else is going to let me just ask one more thing before we leave this.
Okay.
You are in Florida.
Yes.
Are you consuming citrus on a daily basis?
No, probably not. I probably have citrus maybe weekly or up to 3 times a week.
Pineapple?
Pineapple sometimes when it's in season. Although that's kind of weird because it doesn't, nobody really farms it here anymore. But I do have a pineapple growing in my front yard.
Right. So what I'm tracing here is fruit acids. And
okay.
Fruit acids can be very upsetting to the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
So you might just, out of curiosity, want to see what happens if there's less fruit acids and if you respond favorably to that and use more cooked fruit rather than raw fruit.
Right. Well, I really appreciate yes, and it's interesting, as you say that, I did, before the problem started to get worse, I did start adding like a grapefruit to my diet, which is something that I hadn't had before on a much more regular basis. Not daily, but, a few times a week. And so maybe that's changed some of the balance that's contributed to this. So I appreciate that.
So let's find out from Rebecca if somebody else is waiting. Let's go on to them. And if not, then
there
I'm
is one more
open
person
to your
waiting.
Asking. There is someone waiting?
Oh, okay.
Yes. And you can always call back another time.
I will. Thank you so much. It's very wonderful to speak with you. And thank you, Rebecca, for moderating.
Okay. Lots of love, Jody.
Thank you. Right back at you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
All right, it looks like we have a Skype caller, possibly, 111 area code. Hello.
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 Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so this is, I've come through. I didn't realize I called from, am I speaking to Susan right now?
Yes,
you are.
Okay, sorry, I'm from the 819 area, so I was a little confused whether it was myself or somebody else who was getting through. Hi, Susan, it's Monique calling from Valmorang.
Sounds like Monique. Hey, Monique. You know, I think it was, I think 111 is Canada.
Oh, okay, there we go.
I think that's where I was coming through, is that.
Okay, well, I'll know that for the next time.
There you go.
And
all right, hey, wonderful voice.
Great to hear yours as well, and what a treat it is to be enjoying Blog Talk tonight. I was calling in because with my daughter Maggie, she's six, and we're just still trying to put to sleep the shingles in her eye. And she's down. It's getting better and better. She's doing great. We're down to two cells still being active in her eye, her left eye. And she is being followed here by a great hospital, a great ophthalmologist. And I'm still doing drops with her, corticosteroid drops, three times a day. And I would like to know how to properly support her with St. John's wort, because I'm giving it to her, but I always feel a little insecure that I don't know how much I should be giving to her and how often in the day. So I'm calling to please inform myself on that matter.
It's a really good question, but the answer is that it's not a big deal.
Okay.
Hypericum tincture is the kind of tincture that I feel very safe using in any quantity, and there seems to be effective even in small quantities.
Okay.
So to give you an idea of perhaps an upper limit, I know people on the West Coast who were diagnosed HIV positive over 25 years ago and have been taking a dropper full of hypericum tincture hourly while they're awake and have not progressed to AIDS and are not taking any drugs of any kind.
Okay.
That's a lot of hypericum over a long time.
Yeah.
And no problems.
Oh, that's good news.
So I don't think that you could possibly overdose her.
Okay.
The most I've ever taken was a dropper full every 15 minutes for 3 hours.
Okay.
And I had no side effects of any kind from doing that. And I did that because I had this horrible sciatic pain that kind of burst into being and ran down the side of my leg. And I said, I refuse to allow this to happen. And I took a dropper full of hypericum every 15 minutes until the pain went away. That was my sciatica attack, 3 hours over and done with. Never to come back. Never, ever, ever to come back. So that's a lavish amount, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm totally fine.
Okay.
And yet I've seen people respond to small doses. And we know that the wonderful herbalist Matthew Wood, His dose range of all tinctures is 1 to 3 drops.
1 to 3 drops.
That's his dosage range of any tincture. So, with some tinctures, it matters a lot. You take dropperfuls of poke root tincture, you're going to throw up and be miserable. Right, we want 1 or 2 drop doses of it. So you're always safe taking tiny amounts of a tincture.
Okay.
But with hypericum, you're also safe taking larger amounts.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So I will continue and not feel afraid that I'm getting her drunk or something. I don't know. I was always worried with the eye drops, that all this happening, that it was... That somehow I was maybe going overboard with it. So, great. I'll continue.
There's approximately 40 dropperfuls in a 1 ounce bottle.
Okay.
Okay. And an ounce of alcohol is what's in a mixed drink.
Yeah.
So when someone gets drunk, they've usually had like three or four mixed drinks, which is three mm-hmm. or four bottles full of hypericum tincture.
Yeah. I haven't been putting that in her water bottle.
You're not putting that much in her bottle. It's the alcohol
no.
negligible here. Yeah. As a matter of fact, you know, by law, if you had to, you know, say how much was in there, you could say zero because it's less than
1%.
Okay. Okay.
That's thank you. And if I could conclude it with the shingles in the eye, can it take this long? Is this a normal process that it would be almost a year long that this tango has been going on?
For some people, it goes on for their entire life.
Okay.
I'm so glad that she's under the care of an ophthalmologist. Because mm-hmm. for some people, it can cause blindness.
Yeah.
I mean, having shingles in or near the eyes is considered a serious medical condition.
Yeah.
So I think that you and she are doing great.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Have a
lots of
evening.
Love to you both and to your wonderful family.
Thank you. To you as well and to everyone. Good night.
Dream blessings. Good night.
All right. We'll go back to an email question.
And
hi,
I especially,
Susan. I especially
want to thank Monique. She was one of the readers for Down There, and she just did a wonderful, wonderful job. She was so thorough and so forthcoming and helpful as a reader in the manuscript form of Down There that I just want to offer a special thank you. There were lots of women who were readers. But here's Monique right there, so thank you once again, Monique. All right, let's go on to the email
question. All right. Hi, Susan. I hope you can help me. I am an herbalist living in Byron Bay and have just started menopause. I have not had a period for 4 months now, but all of a sudden I am getting the usual hot flashes, which do not bother me very much as it is cool outside and it is quite nice. But the pain in my back and right leg is terrible, which I have addressed with herbs and a good osteopath. The main problem, which is not painful, is my back clicks and pops constantly. Even my partner hears it. What is it exactly? I have many books, but they do not fully explain it, and I would like to address this problem if I can. I am doing all the herbal treatments with great results except for this clicking thing. A colleague of mine told me to put some music on while making love, but I can still hear the clicking. I hope you can enlighten me. Thank you for your time.
Well, this is one of those questions that can be really quite difficult to get to the bottom of without the actual person being there. So please forgive me if some of the things that I say have nothing at all to do with you, because I just have to make some kind of, you know, wild guesses here as to what could possibly be going on. One of the first things that occurs to me is, oh, limited diet, vegetarian diet, vegan diet, raw food diet, not enough fat in the diet, not enough animal protein, not enough animal fat in the diet, basically getting dry as we get older is something that happens to women, and we need to up the amount of butter and full fat cheese and liver and meat and fish that we eat. And maybe you're saying, I eat all of that stuff, but who knows, maybe you're saying, oops, yes, indeed, my 20 years of vegetarianism is finally indeed catching up with me. The other thing that I can say is, you ever heard somebody pop their knuckles? Think about it. What do they do? They pull their finger until the joint opens up a little bit, and that allows a little air. Yeah, there's air inside your body. That allows a little bit of air to get in there. And then when they release it, pop, that air pops like a little balloon. So somehow you are doing a similar thing with your spine. You're opening your spine up and allowing little air bubbles to get trapped in there, which then snap, crackle, and pop as they come out. If I'm completely wrong on the dietary thing, if I'm right on the dietary thing, then it might not be air at all. But if I'm totally off base on the dietary thing, then it might simply be, should we call it somewhat of a mechanical problem. In both instances, massage might be a really wonderful way to help yourself. Now, I'm getting an image in my mind of the Ma roller that we have down in our yoga room. And they're still made, M-A, Ma. It's a Chinese term for the muscles on either side of the spine, what we would call the tenderloins. Yes, in a big animal, the muscles right along the spine, both interiorly and exteriorly, are the tenderloins. The inner ones are the better tenderloins. And the Ma rollers, those muscles are Ma, I am told, in Chinese. And the Ma roller allows you to lay on the ground on the Ma roller and to roll yourself and those muscles into greater freedom. Because if you are somehow pulling your spine so that air bubbles get in there, and it might in fact be a combination of the two things, then the Ma roller will release the tension in the muscles, because it's probably muscle tension that is causing that stretching, which allows the air bubbles to be there and then to pop as you move. Green blessings.
Okay, next question. Hi, I have a growth in my uterus, and I'm wondering if chickweed tincture would work to shrink that. Also, is a tincture the same as an extract? Thank you so much.
It's hard to know what people mean when they say an extract. A tincture is an alcohol-based preparation of an herb. An extract can be just about anything. It could be an alcohol-based herbal remedy, but it could also be other things as well. So you need to look carefully and see what the actual ingredients are on the tincture or the extract that you're going to be using. Could you read the first part of that over to me again, Rebecca, please?
Yes. She says, hi, I have a growth in my uterus, and I am wondering if chickweed tincture would work to shrink that.
Okay. I wanted to be sure that she actually said growth. And it's a little ambiguous, growth. Growth, oh, we grow up. Well, hey, growth is wonderful. There's a cancerous growth. No. Now growth is not so wonderful at all. Chickweed tends to dissolve cysts. While cysts may fall under the general category of growths, I doubt that what she's talking about is a cyst in her uterus. It could be a fibroid. It could be an adenoma. It could be cancer. Technically speaking, midwives sometimes do call fetuses growths in the uterus. That's what they are. It's a growth in the uterus. A placenta is a growth in the uterus. So the short answer to this question is no. Chickweed tincture probably wouldn't shrink it. And the long answer to this is, what kind of growth? What do you know about it? How long has it been there? Is it causing bleeding? Is anybody looking at it? Do you have a copy of Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way, which covers growths in the uterus? Green blessings.
Okay. Next question. Dear Susan, I am writing to thank you for the healing way you embrace womanhood in all stages of its stages. And for sharing the secrets of the plant allies. Your gift has been so comforting. You truly embody the Divine Mother. I have so appreciated the new menopausal years and cannot even remember how many copies I have to keep buying because I pass them on to so many others. Nettle tea is one of my closest friends. Thank you, thank you. I am confused because everything in my life seems to be taking so long. I am pretty sure I was already in perimenopause for a few years before my marriage exploded 7 years ago. I have dipped into depression and anxiety for a long time, had issues with these for decades, post-traumatic stress syndrome issues, child abuse, etc., and had already been on a spiritual journey for quite some time. I have not been able to receive and step into the power to move forward in life the way I think I should. Still not divorced, still scared too often. I am working full-time taking care of medically fragile children and trying to get and stay financially solvent in a time when I have such an urge to take the woman's year away. I find I just need to take breaks because I cannot get myself to face my other tasks on my days off. I spend a lot of time resting and praying and feeling badly that I am not taking care of the details that can help me open to the life that is waiting for me. I have withdrawn from so much for so long. Still need to find healing in my heart so that I can open up to living joyfully and loving others more again. I have so many tasks. I seem to crumble under responsibility so that even things that I am capable of doing, I can't get done. I am getting counseling and have more good days than I have had for years, but it is still so up and down. I am growing in my passion of learning both natural and supernatural healing and feel most alive when able to spend time and energy within this community. Someday when my life is a little more simple, I hope to take one of your courses. I am 53, still having periods, but more irregular, sometimes 4 weeks apart, sometimes 2 to 3 weeks, occasionally missing one. They are mostly 2 to 3 days long. I am concerned that this birthing of my true self process is taking so long that I am going to be able to do it, and mother and or child, both me, will die in the process. In your book, it sounds like everyone goes through this in less time than I am. Can you please think of anything more helpful for me? Thank you so much. Peace be with you.
One of the delights of our heightened awareness about menopause is that we can now talk about menopause freely, and that simply wasn't true 50 years ago. One of the real problems of our heightened awareness of menopause is that women now start to notice menopausal symptoms very, very much earlier than their mothers or grandmothers noticed those symptoms. You have heard me speak about the fact that there is no such thing as perimenopause any more than there is a peripuberty. We could, if we wanted to, we could say that a child is in peripuberty from the time they're born until the time that they actually pass through puberty. But that doesn't really get us anywhere. And just so, saying that women are in perimenopause is just a horrible put-down for women and causes a lot of stress, which I see evidenced in your letter. So let it go. From the time when most women start noticing irregular periods, which seems to be right now for you, until the time when most women have passed through their menopausal metamorphosis and are no longer bleeding and have not had a period of any kind for at least 13 months is generally about 10 years. So as far as I can see, you are not a slow-to-develop person at all. One of the things that we always say in our yoga class is there is no one in class that you should compare yourself to except yourself. And that is certainly good advice for all kinds of things in our life. The only real person that we can compare ourselves to is ourselves. You sound like you're doing wonderful things for yourself, and I really want to support you in doing those wonderful things. And I want to suggest that you perhaps engage in some laughter therapy. I really like laughter therapy, and laughter therapy starts off with 5 minutes of laughter before you go to sleep. I love it when I can remember my laughter therapy. As a matter of fact, I often wake up laughing if I can remember to go to sleep laughing. Sometimes if my sweetheart is already asleep and I lay there and I start laughing, he will start laughing in his sleep as well when I am doing my laughter therapy, so I know that it's not disturbing at all. And you would be surprised, you know, laughing actually changes the hormones that your brain makes and just makes everything move a little better in your life. That is coupled, however, with what sounds to me like it's probably a continuing pressure that you put on yourself to do more, do it faster, and do it better. Stop. It's okay. You are working with fragile children? Wow. That takes a whole lot of sitting around doing nothing. That is a tremendous gift that you are putting out. It's really okay for you to do less housework. Who cares? You know, make your surroundings reasonably neat. Don't have old smelly things around, please. But if the dust piles up, well, you know what? If you get rid of the dust, it's just going to pile up again. So let it pile up. It's okay. Do what's important to you, not what you think others think is important. If what's important to you on your time off is that you go for a walk, or you sit in meditation, or you take a yoga class, or you garden, and those things don't seem to be moving you forward to your goals, I say they are helping you achieve your goal. Because isn't your ultimate goal to be kind to yourself, to honor yourself, and to accept yourself just as you are with all the experiences that you have had in your life? Drink your nourishing herbal infusions. Keep on the path you are. Let yourself off the hook a little more, cut yourself a little more slack, and I think you'll find yourself where you want to be and where you need to be at exactly the right time. Green blessings.
All right, let's move on to the next question. Hi, Susan. Do you have any advice for treating Bartholin's gland cysts? I've had one for almost 2 years now. In the beginning, after it was painfully swollen and large, I had it surgically drained and a balloon and Word catheter inserted for several weeks. Unfortunately, within a week, the cyst came right back. I've been trying to monitor any changes in size and think that I may be noticing a slight hormonal pattern of the cyst getting softer and maybe a little smaller approaching my period and harder and bigger after getting my period. Another thing that comes to mind is a lot of emotional family stress at the time of developing the cyst. I consider myself to be a healthy, active 25-year-old. Until now, I haven't had any type of cyst before. Since developing the cyst, I have had sporadic occurrences of small cysts inside my ears. I should also note that I've been dealing with very dry skin as well as redness and some irritation in my face that lasts a couple years, as well as a bit of brain fog. Not sure if this was a result from my long-term vegan diet, but I have recently started consuming animal products to see if there's any change. I was reading a lot about chickweed in your book and your articles and wonder if this could be a good remedy for me. Thank you so much for your time and wisdom. Abundant blessings.
I'm glad that you have noticed that a vegan diet is not a healthy diet. I am glad that you have decided to love animals so much that you will let them into your life and into your body. What an honor, what a gift to be willing to embrace all that there is to help you. Bartholin's gland vestibular cysts, of course, is in down there, page 138, step zero, do nothing. Cysts, even infections in the vestibular glands, rarely spread or cause any damage, so it's not necessary to treat it. Step one, collect information. Nonetheless, cysts and abscesses in these glands can cause swelling and rigidity, and that can hurt indeed and make vaginal things uncomfortable too. Step two, engage the energy. Homeopathic remedies for women with vestibular gland cysts include aconitum, rhododendron, serona cellulata, bariata carb, lycopodium, and pulsatilla. Given what you have said about the cysts and things that are going on, pulsatilla, and pulsatilla probably at least a 1C dilution might be a wonderful ally for you. Step three, nourish and tonify. Nourishing herbal infusions of oat straw or red clover help to normalize hormones and calm vestibular gland distress. And as you have noticed, these cysts are frequently changeable according to the hormones that are circulating in the body. Step four, stimulate, sedate. Dissolve Bartholin gland cysts with a hot sitz bath or a compress of comfrey leaf, oak bark, or even green clay. A comfrey leaf compress applied directly eases swelling, relieves pain, softens the skin, and dissolves the cysts. Its astringent constituents tone and strengthen vaginal tissues. Compressing with comfrey leaf often produces better results than a few lengthy applications. Boil fresh comfrey leaves, if you have them, in water to cover until soft, about 15 to 45 minutes. If you don't have, then fold them into a cotton or linen towel and apply to the cyst. If you don't have fresh comfrey, pour a quart of boiling water over an ounce of dried comfrey leaf. Let it infuse for 4 hours, strain, drink the liquid, and compress with the wet leaves from the infusion. Infected or abscessed Bartholin gland cysts may require the use of anti-infective herbs. I don't think that's what's going on with yours. Twice daily applications of a softening herbal oil can eliminate vestibular gland cysts with little effort. My favorites include red clover oil, comfrey root oil, and plantain oil. Step five, use drugs. Oreganol, the essential oil of oregano, can burn off cysts. Ooh! And burn sensitive vaginal tissues too. Ouch! Step six, break and enter. Yes, an MD can lance your cyst and do all kinds of other things, but why bother? It usually grows right back. A hot comfrey sitz bath or a compress works as well, with much less risk of infection. Help vestibular cysts. You can expect results within a week. First, apply a hot towel, a hot herbal compress, or softening oil to the cyst twice a day. So that could be a comfrey leaf compress and plantain oil. Two, take one drop of poke root tincture daily for 7 to 10 days. That's not a dropper full. It is one tiny little drop, and take it in some water. And three, do the guided meditation for a secure vagina. Remember that what the vagina says is, I will protect you. I am toothed, armed, and ready to bite. I have the power to defend and to keep you safe. I am not passive, accepting and waiting to be filled. I am aware, watchful, and ready to seize what I will and reject what I don't. So allow the message here to come through to you. What is this protecting you against? I wouldn't say that if this was just a single occurrence, but this is an occurrence that has been going on, and has been going on, I believe you said, for several years. So time to think about how is it helping me? How is it protecting me? Green blessings.
All right. Let's move on to the next question. Dear Susan, God bless you for the information you are sharing. I am on a healing journey right now to heal my body from suffering years of emotional trauma. I know that God's pharmacy is powerful with herbs and natural methods to help nourish and restore the immune system. From your experience, is there a powerful healing agent to put on a lump on the breast to allow it to dissolve and be gently washed away in the bloodstream? I know stress and heartache cause the body to break down, and I know the cyst tumor in the breast is a reflection of this. I have been taking various herbs and putting poultices on the breast. It will not be a quick fix. I realize this. As I have to build up the immune system slowly to get outdoors, get sunshine, and sleep properly. I just wondered if there is something in your experience that will help dissolve the lump, a poultice that gently works to heal the cells. Right now I have been putting castor oil, olive oil, and rosemary essential oil on the cotton ball and taping it to the breast with a bandage. I had had diverticulitis years ago, so I have been cleaning out the bowel and colon through coffee enemas, cleansing, and juicing. I am a prayer warrior, am going to God to guide me and making it a priority to start loving myself and being good to me. I have healing saltwater baths and making nourishing, healthy meals and doing everything I can to heal myself and rebuild my life. My finances are limited as I was not able to work. I am at rock bottom, but have faith I will rise above all that I went through. I have closed the door to the past and see a bright future as I take back my power and heal my life. I have had ultrasounds, and the doctor now wants to do a mammogram, biopsy, and operate. I know this will only hurt the already weakened immune system, and besides, most tumors often grow back if one doesn't address the root of the problem. I have decided against these further procedures as they can spread the cancer and cause even more problems. I am visualizing the end result, seeing myself completely healed, happy, and whole from natural methods, happiness, nutrition, prayer, exercise, sunlight. Sending you blessings of light in God's light. Thank you.
I'm not sure what to say. So I'm going to say a variety of things. The first thing that I would say is you don't want my advice. And if I were the person who wrote this letter, and you're listening to this now, I would turn the recording off right now. I would not listen to a further thing that Susan Weed had to say. You go on your way, doing things your way, the way that you envision your bright future, and you turn me off, and you listen to nothing. Okay, for the rest of you, or if you ignored what I just said, then let me say that as far as I am concerned, virtually everything you are doing is making the situation far, far worse. I shudder that you are doing coffee enemas. I groan that you are juicing. I am appalled by the way you are treating yourself. I am convinced that you have cancer, and I think that surgery is absolutely the very best thing to do for you and for your immune system. The immune system is burdened by the presence of the cancer. I am outraged that you are applying rosemary essential oil to your breast. You, over and over again, said, is there something nice, is there something soothing? Is there something gentle? Is there some, and rosemary is none of those things. Rosemary is caustic. Now, there's a third thing that I could say, and that is that I have a book called Breast Cancer? Breast Health! The Wise Woman Way. And it covers all of your options. Surgery is what we're looking at right now. Does that have to be surgery that the doctor does? It doesn't have to be. I will tell you that in the vast majority of cases, surgery is really the easiest and best thing to do, relieves the immune system, and just helps the person survive for a much, much longer time than they would have if they didn't have the surgery. But I do know that there are some people who simply won't hear of it, no matter what is said to them, no matter how much we might think that woman is risking her life by refusing surgery. And that is certainly what I think in this situation, that you are indeed risking your life by refusing surgery. That nonetheless, there are women who won't do the surgery. And so I have a page in the surgery section called Instead of Surgery. And Instead of Surgery gives us all of the information that we need to deal with removing a breast tumor without knives. That's on page 188 in Breast Cancer? Breast Health! The Wise Woman Way. And if you feel that you can't afford it, perhaps your library could get a copy for you. Very few women with breast cancer who understand what's going on refuse surgery. There are, however, options for those who absolutely refuse surgery. Carefully prepared salves containing herbs and alkaline materials can selectively destroy malignant cells while hardly affecting normal tissues. These treatments, however, cause severe pain and leave scars. So proceed with caution. Take the time to read Cancer Salves and Suppositories by Dr. Ingrid Naaman, which is available from the author, and I give you her address. I do not think she has a website. She was even a little reluctant to let me put her address in my book, but I convinced her that her information was so vital to some people. She is concerned that people will think poorly of her for the information that she shares, but I certainly do not. And then on page 188, I continue with poke root poultices, which burn away the cancer, tea tree oil, or in your case, rosemary oil, which also burn away the cancer, escharotic salves, which contain caustic herbs and minerals, blister and destroy the skin over the tumor. Black ointment is a classic example of this. Yellow salve is a little more healing. It's often rotated with the escharotic salve. And some breast cancers can be resolved with therapeutic radiation plus very high doses of beta-carotene. I truly hope that if you've listened to this answer all the way through to here, that you start drinking nourishing herbal infusions, and that you eat only cooked food, no raw food and no juices of any kind, that you avoid any kind of enemas, and that you avoid all supplements. Green blessings.
Okay. Dear Susan, what if I don't want to use alcohol? How can I benefit from motherwort and hawthorn just as good? I am a Muslim living in the UK. Kindest regards.
There is no injunction against Muslims using tinctures as medicine. I have Muslim students who use tinctures as medicine. We are not talking recreational use of alcohol here. We are talking tiny, tiny amounts of it. Hawthorn is just as useful as an infusion as it is as a tincture, but motherwort is not. If you want the benefits of hawthorn, you can make hawthorn infusion from the hawthorn haws or from the leaves and flowers of the hawthorn and drink that on a daily basis rather than taking the tincture on a daily basis. That seems to work just fine. Motherwort tastes really bad. You are not going to get the same effect, and you're not going to be willing to take motherwort. So you could either not take motherwort, or you could listen to me. This is something that has come up over and over again. I've been dealing with it for virtually 40 years, and it's very, very clear. There is no injunction in your religion against using alcohol as a medicine in very small doses, which is exactly what we're talking about. A dose of motherwort can be as little as 5 drops. Given that there's approximately 25 drops in a dropperful and 40 dropperfuls in a bottle, that's 1,000 drops in a bottle of motherwort tincture. If those are taken 5 at a time, then we would have 200 doses, so each dose would be 1/200th of an ounce of alcohol. Guess what? There's more alcohol in bread than there would be in a single 5-drop dose of motherwort tincture properly diluted in a glass of water. Green blessings. And you might wonder why there's alcohol in bread. What does she mean, alcohol in bread? Bread is yeasted, and yeast converts sugar into alcohol. And so there's always a slight amount of alcohol in any bread.
Mm. And pretty much anything fermented, right? Not just bread. Lots of fermented things contain trace amounts of alcohol.
Exactly. And that's all we're talking about is trace amounts of alcohol.
Okay, we'll go on to the next question. Could you please talk some about ground ivy? I have read a bit about it, but one thing which confuses me is that there is a question of it being harmful. I have noticed this mostly in connection with the tea and people using the whole herb, no root. I was thinking perhaps the potentially harmful part is the stem nodes, where roots or flowers might grow depending on how the ground ivy grows up or out. Therefore, the leaves are best. Do you have any insight on this? Thank you, and green blessings.
I really am completely at a loss as to what to say because I don't know what kind of harm you're talking about. And I haven't personally heard of any harm. We're talking about Glechoma heteraceae, which some herbalists like Julia Tavercoli-Levy calls ground ivy, which makes it sound like ivy that has been ground up, and it's not. And it's also called Creeping Jenny, Creeping Charlie, Gill over the ground. And it's a mint. It's a rather mild mint, and there's no more harm to be had from ground ivy than there is from peppermint. So generally the reason that we don't use the roots of the mints is that they're not aromatic the way the tops of the mints are, but it's not because the roots are poisonous or dangerous in any way. It's simply that many times mints are perennials, and by using the top part of the plant, we can harvest again and again and again, whereas if we were to dig up the root, then we would have to replace the plant on a yearly basis. I use Glechoma, gill over the ground or ground ivy, in my salads, and I use lavish amounts of it in my salads. I usually use the flowering tops. Midwives use Glechoma heteraceae tinctured as an aid to bringing down a stuck placenta. I was once contacted by a Swiss woman who is living in the United States and in Switzerland. Her doctor used tincture of glaucoma and tea of glaucoma to help her overcome severe infections in her lungs because she is allergic to antibiotics and can't use antibiotics to help deal with the very, very bad infections that she can get in her lungs. So all of these things that I know about this plant and all of the ways that I have used this plant, I have made wine from it, I've made vinegar from it, I've made honey from it, and I have never once heard anybody say a single word about there being any problem of any kind. Green blessings.
All right, another herbal question here. Hello, Susan. I am writing to you from New Zealand. I found your article on hibiscus flowers very interesting. Given the enormous interest in hibiscus vitifolius and the extract gossypin, which has been lighting up the internet of recent times, I wonder if you know whether gossypin is found in other varieties of hibiscus flowers, maybe in lesser amounts. I would also be very interested to know, re-eating these flowers, are all varieties edible, and could they be blended up into a smoothie, say, with kale and spinach? I am wondering if small amounts of gossypin might be able to be ingested on a daily basis by consuming hibiscus flowers. I am communicating regularly with a scientist who did the research on gossypin, and I am aware of someone who took it orally with great success. If you have time to get back to me, it would be much appreciated. Many thanks.
Well, a lot of unanswered questions here for me about this. I've never heard of this compound that you're talking about. I generally tend not to look for an active compound in the herbs, and I definitely do not take an active compound separated out from the plant as a supplement, nor ever recommend that that be done. That said, all hibiscus are edible, and all parts of all hibiscus are edible. In other words, the flowers of all hibiscus can be eaten, the leaves of all hibiscus, the roots of all hibiscus, even the seeds of hibiscus can be eaten. The seed pods of a hibiscus are called okra, if that's the variety that we are growing. This is a very, very edible plant and a very friendly plant to us. So I can't imagine that there's going to be any harm in using it in any way. My understanding is that the hibiscus that we're talking about that's medicinal is not actually the flower of the hibiscus at all, but the calyx of the flower, the stiff part that the flower is in, and that we're specifically medicinally talking about hibiscus sativa, which is a specific form of hibiscus. As I said, all hibiscus are certainly usable, edible, no problem of any kind, but this one particular kind of hibiscus does seem to have more medicinal qualities, and most of the time it is what is sold as dried hibiscus flowers. If you'll notice, it actually feels pretty stiff and pretty hard, letting you know it really is the calyxes and not the flowers at all. I do not think that it is a good idea to make smoothies with green plants. The Center for Disease Control says that half of all cases of food poisoning are caused by raw greens. Not only that, when you make a smoothie from raw greens like kale, in addition to making a lethal drink, as far as I'm concerned, you are making a drink that has no nutrition of any kind. There's not a single mineral in that green smoothie. There's no protein in that green smoothie. There's no phytosterols in that green smoothie. And no, there wouldn't be any of this compound that you're talking about When we eat raw plants, we are eating nothing. We are getting nothing. Want to learn more about it? Check out the YouTube, the Raw versus Cooked Debate. You'll see me debating Brigitte Mars, a leading voice in the raw food movement, and you'll see why I wouldn't let this video be sold, because I love my friend Brigitte, and she doesn't come off on this video looking like someone who knows what she's talking about. One of my students just called me last week and said, I hate you for the raw versus cooked debate. I said, how come? She said, because you convinced me utterly and without any recourse to accept that in fact there is no nutrition available in raw foods and to stop the nonsense in my diet. I hope you stop the nonsense in your diet too.
Great.
Green blessings.
We did have someone that just queued up with a question. So
okay.
In the 303 area code.
Hi, Susan.
Hi.
I had a quick question. I'm in menopause, and I'm not sure whether the red clover infusion is appropriate to drink to help or not.
Let me focus on one of the words you've just said, and that word is help. So let me ask you this. What did you use to help yourself through puberty?
Nothing.
Did you get through it?
Yep.
Guess what? You don't need anything to help you get through menopause. Menopause, like puberty, is a natural process that is healthy and significant for the woman, but there is no help of any kind that is needed. Your body knows how to do this. Now, some people that I know, like Dr. Christian Northrup and Dr. Susan Love, believe, and I believe along with them, that how we nourish ourselves during our menopausal years is going to set the stage for the rest of our lives. And so I think it's critically important, if you haven't already been drinking nourishing herbal infusions, to let menopause kick your behind to get you started on drinking nourishing herbal infusions. If you haven't already figured out that a broad diet that includes animal products is the healthiest diet, then let menopause tweak your nose and say, hey, stop limiting my diet. I need animal fat and animal protein in order to be a healthy older woman.
Yeah.
Red clover is a nourishing herbal infusion. I drink approximately a quart of nourishing herbal infusion on a daily basis, and I rotate through red clover, stinging nettle, oat straw, comfrey leaf, and linden. Each one of these has incredibly helpful abilities for all aspects of our being, our hormonal system, our immune system, our nervous system, our heart, our liver, our glands, our reproductive organs. I truly believe, and tens of thousands of people are now backing me up in saying that the single best thing that any of us can do for our health is to start drinking nourishing herbal infusions. I wouldn't drink more than 2 quarts of red clover infusion a week.
Okay.
Again, not a medicine, it's a food.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah, I've been using
what other herbal infusions besides red clover are you working with?
Oat straw and stinging nettle.
Excellent. So
yeah,
then you can rotate through those, having one per day, and you'll wind up having 2 quarts of each one over the course of a week.
Yep, you're right.
Does that work for you?
Okay. It works. I thought I heard something conflicting earlier about something about short chain estrogens or receptors or something like that, and I thought, well, I want to make sure that, you know,
Let me see if I can go over this very briefly for you. Some estrogens are long path estrogens, and some estrogens are short path estrogens. And this refers to how they are metabolized, not to their chemical structure. A chain has to do with a chemical structure, and it's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a metabolic pathway. Short path estrogens are metabolized quickly, fill up receptor sites, and help prevent cancer. Long path estrogens are metabolized slowly and can feed cancer. Red clover is a short path estrogen, and thus it is protective against breast cancer.
Ah, okay. Cool. Thank you.
You're welcome. Green blessings.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's see if we can get this last caller that just queued up in.
Okay.
603.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Rose calling again. Thank you for sharing me out. I have questions on some herbs growing around me. I would like clarification, please, on the two different kinds of comfrey, which is safe to eat. One has purple flowers, and the other one, I believe, is the Russian comfrey that has the white flowers. And also, if you could please comment on black locust as far as it being edible. And the third one is, please, about my asparagus. I have missed the window of opportunity to pick my asparagus before it goes to seed for 3 years in a row now, and it's been there for over 10 years. And I wonder if it will kill the plant. Is there anything I can do to harvest some of it now, or will it kill the plant? I tried it on a friend's 1 year, and I believe it killed the plant when I suggested she try harvesting or cutting off the tender tips. So I will listen for your advice, please. Thank you so much.
The difficulty is that I have only 120 seconds.
Okay. Take your pick. I'll try again next week. Thank you.
Oh, you are completely wrong about the comfrey. Let's start there. First of all, I doubt that you have Symphytum officinale growing anywhere around you because it doesn't grow wild. It's a small plant with yellow flowers that can be white or slightly pink. And that is standard comfrey. The Russian comfrey is the tall comfrey with the purple flowers. Just the opposite of what you said, right?
Yes, I bought this from a permaculture specialist who is selling it as Russian comfrey, and that one has the white flowers. I have planted myself the purple one and have that one for years, so I need
and the one with
correct...
the white flowers is how big?
It's quite big now. I have
it's
to go out there.
It's simply another variety of Russian comfrey.
Okay.
The Symphytum officinalis, small, it never gets above knee-high.
Which one, the officinalis?
So the color of the flowers is insignificant and immaterial.
Okay. So the knee-high one, you said, is the officinalis?
Correct, the one we do not want to use.
Do not use. No, I don't have a knee-high one. It grows taller.
The ones that grow tall are the ones that we want to use. So
okay.
Far as I know, there is no harm to letting the asparagus go to... But if you want to, I also don't think there's any harm to cutting their fronds, their very ferny fronds, off. There's a line of asparagus that somebody planted, I'm going to guess, 125 years ago near me. And if I don't get there in time, it goes up to ferny fronds. And that's been happening probably for over a century. Still nice and strong. And if I get there early enough, I get asparagus. And if not, the birds get the berries. Thank you so much, all of you, for your questions and your comments and your letters. And thank you, Rebecca, for your wonderful help in getting people to the phone and getting the email questions answered. Green blessings are everywhere. Thank you all for helping me reestablish herbal medicine as people's medicine. Good night.